Thanks to Hawthorne for supporting FilmSack. Hawthorne is a premium, tailored personal care brand that's making it easy for guys to feel and smell their best. Get special offers for the holidays going on right now by visiting hawthorne.co.
There is great unrest. Countries set at each other's throats, baying for blood. It's a powder keg. The trouble of which I speak could set a match to the whole thing. War.
With whom, exactly?
Everyone. A world war.
That notion makes you sweat. Venice still stands.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 489, and my name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian. I think your library might be screwed, Dunaway.
Oh, it is so screwed. Oh, hi. We did it, Dorian. You said we couldn't do it, even after I stole your magic portrait and blackmailed you. You were still a doubting Dorian, weren't you? But not anymore. We did just as I said. We fooled the League, stole Nemo's tiny exploration pod, and checked off all the evil things on our freaky little supernatural 19th century checklist. Damn, it feels good to be the M. That's short for Moriarty, you know. Say, it's kind of cramped in this small pod, Dorian. How long do we have to be in here before we reach our destination? Wow, days, eh? You know what? Kind of regretting that all-Mongolian beef diet we adopted. Can we pop a window? No? All right. I can hold it. Hey, do you hear that tapping sound? What is that? It almost sounds like Morse code. What? Morse code? Are you sure? I'm pretty sure it is Morse code. And I'm a genius, so... Yeah. I get that you're old with, and with age comes wisdom. I get it. But you're apparently not wise enough to hide your portrait of doom. Anyway. Oh my God. Why does it smell like a sweaty Scotsman's ass in here? Are you sure there are no windows? A porthole, a vent? And why is your knee touching my knee? Give me some space, man. What do you mean it's not your knee? Of course it's your knee. Who else's knee could it be? And there goes the tapping sound again. This is going to be one long, extraordinary trip of gentlemen. Randy?
I have to say, I appreciate your... You have a delineation marker now that you do every time, and so I just know when you're done. Yeah, I like it.
Oh, the Randy. Yeah. There's the middle. There's the middle delineation mark, which is hey,
hey, hey, hey. Yeah, hey, we're gonna have a different conversation now. Hey,
these are like chapter markers or something. Like that.
That's right. Exactly. Mini right. bosses, and then you get to the final boss, which is Randy.
Well. Exact same thing was pointed out this week when you listen to Joe Biden speak. He delineates by saying "look" real loudly.
Oh yeah,
as he's talking, he changes subjects. Look,
yeah,
and he keeps talking.
And
anyway,
it says, come on, man, or something.
Come on, man. Oh, come on, man.
Oh, come on, man.
Do you realize there was a naked, invisible guy in that little bitty pod with those two guys? Why do they all need to be in there for the story? I don't know.
Ew,
but I guarantee
naked.
you can't see Invisible Man. But I bet you in that close of an area, you can smell him.
Yep. Yeah. He had an aroma in that era. Oh, yeah. No one showered for like 8 days and straight. So
got your butt all hanging out.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Nope. Thanks
dangling
for reminding me of that.
Dangling.
Well done. Also with us, Randy. No, that terrible scene of Mr. Hyde running on rooftops was not just... What? Oh, was not just a dumb dream. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Brian.
Randy.
All right, you found me. I'm Superman. I know I'm not what you were expecting, but I am wearing glasses, so that could throw you, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm older now, and I'm chubby, but I really am Superman. Hey, don't look over my shoulder at the fit gentleman wearing the same clothes as me in the chair behind me. You look at me. Okay, right. No. Don't tell me why you're here. That would save us a lot of trouble, but no. I'm going to tell you why I think you're here, and then that miscommunication will lead to remarkable events. I've done this before. Remember, I've been Superman for a long time. Anyway, I can see right through you. Get it? Because I have X-ray vision. Okay, I try using that line on women, but no women ever come in here, like zero, ever. There are some men coming in here with guns right now, though. Don't show me. I'm not Superman. I'm not Superman.
Meanwhile, in Kenya. Yeah. Hey, Nigel, won't you just toddle off then?
Yeah, get out of here, buddy. All right, well done. Finally with us, Brian. I can't tell if he has sand in his body or blood, Ibbit.
Ew. That's bloody sand.
Oh.
Ew. I like to thank you all for coming to our first ever Consortium of Uninteresting Fictional Characters meeting. The CUFC. Yeah, even that acronym is not terribly interesting. Ever since the folks down the hall started their League of Extraordinary Gentlemen agency, we felt like we needed to have a little more inclusion. So you're not as interesting as the replacement Invisible Man, or you're not as interesting as one of the women that got bitten by Dracula. We welcome you here. But before we get to the uninteresting business of the day, we'll need to take roll. When I call your name, I know you'll just say, here, because that in and of itself is boring. Toby Flenderson from The Office? Okay, good. Harry Potter? Oh, you're sitting right next to me. Wow, how long have you been there? Orville Redenbacher? I always thought you were real. Oh, you are? Oh, go sit over there with the Kardashians. I'll get to you after the PowerPoint presentation. Skylar White? Good, good, thank you. Wesley Crusher? Oh, there you are over there. Okay, Gilly Tarly? There you are right there. And finally, Jacob and Edward. You guys okay sitting next to each other? Yeah, I don't care either. And who am I? Who could be tasked with leading a team of the most uninteresting fictional characters, you ask? I'm Brian Ibbett. There's some eclairs in the back.
Yeah. Nice.
That was great. I had that. You put into words pretty well what I was feeling about these random picked ass names.
I mean, yes, but I want to start with, like, there were some things in this movie, and I decided that I was going to go all in on one of them, that I really wanted the movie to be. And that scene where, you know, Sean Connery is just sitting in a bar in Kenya, and he has a double who's really crappy, not a double at all, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Who does his talking for him so he can have some peace and quiet in a bar in the desert. Like, that whole thing, I was just like, I wish the whole movie was this.
Yeah.
That's the
primary problem with a league or the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is this movie wants to be many things and never picks a thing. And so everybody ends up wishing it was just the one thing.
Over the map. And we hadn't gotten good at, like, group team up, you know, movies like this, like Avengers style or something, if you want to talk about modern examples.
You say we hadn't, but I would argue no one has ever except Marvel.
Well,
like, I would argue that there's been this one magical team up and all the rest of them are always garbage.
What was the Janine Garofalo
That was great.
Mystery Men was pretty good. It balanced people pretty well. But like Star Trek was famous for screwing that up, right? They would have a Next Generation cast, a Star Trek movie, and you were always like, well, where's Geordi? He's in this like for 4 minutes. Like, he's not even in this movie. And they were just not good at
balancing. The reason Mystery Men worked so well is because because we didn't have all those characters beforehand to say, oh, they brought him back. Oh, look, they brought him back.
There
it was like we got introduced to all those characters all at the same time. They all started at the same level. Whereas with this, you've got, he's almost the Invisible Man. Oh, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I know him. Yeah. Okay. Portrait of Dorian Gray. All right. Okay. Mina Harker. Okay. I guess so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not wrong. Maybe that's the trick.
He was an Invisible Man, by the way.
Right. Not the Invisible Man.
No. An Invisible Man.
Replacement Invisible Man. Yeah.
They wouldn't let him because the people who own the rights to the original thing were like, no. Sorry.
This was the greatest hurdle I would have seen is trying to make this film from the start. I would go, okay, first thing we need to do is all of these characters we've decided to use are all greatly flawed. And so we've got to deal with all these flaws. So we're going to have to find a way to not focus on it entirely and then create a new relationship based on those flaws. And they couldn't find it. Now, they almost had something with Sean Connery's character, Alan Quartermain, and Samuel, fictional American,
Yeah.
Huckleberry Finn. Samuel Sawyer was his name, I think.
Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, Tom. Yeah. Oh, was it Tom Sawyer? I'm sorry. Yeah. It's the Rush song. I'm sorry.
You listen to Rush?
The Rush song. Yeah. Is what I meant to say.
He gets high on you.
He does. Right, he does. He does.
Exit stage left. So hold on, though. Like, I agree, but look, here's the deal. There's a comic book. This is where this came from. A series of graphic novels by Alan Moore. And I forgot the artist's name. He's awesome, though. And they are
not awesome enough to remember his name, but awesome.
But
still,
he really is good. I just can't remember his name. But that series of books is revered. People love it. And I immediately downloaded it last night because I want to actually read it and not say that I've never read it. This is the first time where Alan Moore had one of his projects go to film. This marks the time where he said, "Holy shit, that was bad. I'm never letting anyone do this again, or I'm never going to be a part of this again." And this marks that moment. So when V for Vendetta came out, he's like, whatever, don't care. When Watchmen came out, he's like, nope, don't care. I'm sure it's bad. Like this was that moment. This was the powder keg where he was like, no one's going to treat my stuff with respect. And they really, from what I can tell and from what I read yesterday, they really haven't. Like, this stuff works on comic pages in a way that you need to be really, really good at transferring that experience from those pages to screen, or else you shouldn't even be doing this. Otherwise, it feels like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure did a better job of having random historical figures in your story.
My theory, I think I can extend my theory, because it's like, how did Marvel do a team up? And
by the way, Scott, those were all real people, by the way.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, yeah, historic, but you know what I mean. Like, famous names, here they, I knew they were real.
Penny Dreadful did a better job.
Yeah, there you fictional. Go. That's better.
Yeah.
That's better.
I'm going to let Randy get back to his point.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Randy.
Then I'm going to hop on the back of Randy's train. Go ahead, Randy.
The good examples, and for me, you know, in my experience, the OG is the animated series Super Friends. Mm-hmm. All of the good examples that you're gonna bring up are stories about individuals that take their time and let you get to know the individuals. Now, of course, with Super Friends, you already did. You knew every single one of these characters, and those characters had already been portrayed for hundreds of hours each in comics and other media. But then when you team them up, because you have a connection to one or more of them, you're able to enjoy the team up. This movie, and like so many that fail, tries to get you to be wowed by, oh, there's an invisible man in the room. I'm excited. And you're not. You're not going to be excited because you don't know that guy. You've not spent any time with that character yet. You know, and then it tries to just rush off and have adventure, and you're still like, whoa, hey, let's have a first date, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's to me, well, we should probably mention the name of the movie. We kind of did in passing, but it's The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and this is Sean Connery's last film ever, and that's significant in its own way, but it was also...
He just passed away for us. If you're listening, he just passed away for us, what, a week ago now?
Yeah.
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 That's interesting to say he passed away for us. I've never heard that phrase before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for us, and now the now time, who we are now is a snapshot in this episode, and then we won't be us.
Oh, I got you. Because in a year when you're, or in 10 years when you listen to this episode, you'd be like, wait, what happened? And we're like, yeah, Sean Connery has passed away. You're right. And that was that's a significant, you know, Hollywood icon lost to the ages, and amazing work in his career. Also, some real duds. I mean, we've seen some of those duds here. We've seen Zardoz. We know the penis is evil. We get it.
Hey, was that a dud?
Yeah.
Zardoz?
It's a piece of shit.
I mean, a dud, like a box office dud or just a dud?
That's what I'm asking.
Oh, well, I mean, for us, it was Manna from Heaven, but I'm saying that is not a good movie. It's not a good movie. It's a bad movie. It's a terrible movie.
For me, the weirdest thing, I'm going to remember this the rest of my life, was on Halloween 2000, Sean Connery died, and my friends who watch a lot of movies started posting the picture of him in the Borat getup from Zardoz, and everyone else was like, who is that? What is that from? Mm. Everyone else.
Mm. You said 2000. I think you meant 2020, but go on. Continue.
Yeah. It's a 2,000-year-long year.
We're inventing new things today.
I don't disagree.
Halloween 2020, Connery dies. Picture of him from Zardoz. 80% of the people I knew were like, what horrible, terrible thing is this? Mm. And I'm just like, hey, listen to FilmSack, please.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, please
check
do.
Check it out.
This will be our moment of reckoning for the world, really. This is the pivot point for where Sean Connery's legacy.
There are the people
legacy.
Who know about Zardoz and the people who don't know about Zardoz.
That's right. That's right.
So M recruits James Bond, Sean Connery.
Yeah,
right?
That annoyed me, by the way. Like, I know you're, I know you got to have
Sean
your
Connery connection.
Yeah, you got to have your little James Bond nod. I get it. You've got Sean Connery in your movie, so sure, knock yourselves out. But really, it's that column M, which conveniently stands for Moriarty, which is conveniently the villain for freaking Sherlock Holmes. Like,
right, which fit in everything else because M doesn't fit in with all the rest of these 19th century heroes. So yeah, it's a weird thing. 1899, by the way, this is when the film is supposed to take place, and so it was odd. No, I'm Moriarty.
Yeah.
Right.
Which also, I spent most of the movie struggling with the fact that they kept saying it was 1899 and they kept trying to have these people surrounded by steampunk-esque future inventions. Mm-hmm. Like even
it was called diesel punk, by the way. It's at Wikipedia. Describes it
that's
as diesel punk.
It?
I'm like, I'm like, what is a diesel punk? I'm learning something new.
I've heard that referred to in Mad Max movies, so I don't know what they mean there.
But. Which it makes sense because everything revolves around petrol. You know, gotta have fuel.
I suppose.
You always see it connected with like Jules Verne and steampunk are hand in hand,
right?
And you think of that as not diesel powered, but steam powered because it's
because
Nemo would be using steam, not diesel. Like, oh, I've got to swing by the BP and pick up some more petrol, more diesel.
AM/PM.
But like, if you just allow your brain to get out of the movie for a second, then you can miss like 10 minutes of film going, I'm thinking about that car. That car is very interesting.
That car was so sweet.
You know what I mean? And it's like, of course people don't like this movie. The movie doesn't explain the car. No. It doesn't give you the backstory and the interesting aspects of what that car is doing 50 years ahead of its time.
Well, I'll tell you what
it's
doing.
Definitely it's alternate reality kind of thing where 1899 has German tanks from World War I. Which doesn't happen for at least another 15 years or so. I don't think they would have had the tanks that early in 1899 where they could
storm
the Bank of England.
They had tanks, but not ones that did that. There's no way they did that.
Not like that. Those were advanced tanks. But that's okay because Moriarty was, I guess he was supposed to be.
He's a genius.
Pushing in the future, ushering in the future.
Yeah, but look, the car is not the problem. The problem is the car doesn't exist in that era at all. Cars in general don't. And so this thing driving around town in London and no one's noticing it. Like the passersby are just like, oh.
Except for the
horseless carriage.
The lorries.
Okay, see you.
The lorries are like, wait, stop.
Yeah.
Do not run me over. They did.
Yeah, they weren't like, nobody was going, what is this abomination? Like nobody knew.
Yeah, they couldn't lean into any good, they never asked the really good questions, which is how would people respond to this, because they brushed a lot of it off, because even the league was like, oh, we need to go, to Italy. And it's like, and it's going to take, it's going to take like forever. And you're like, no, it's only going to take 3 days. And for like half a second, they're like, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, let's go.
Yeah, there was
they just
real,
waved it off.
There was some wave off travel time in this movie, which is, mm-hmm. people do that all the time, but definitely was noticeable. I didn't have a problem with his ship. I thought Nemo's ship was rad.
It was sweet.
Yeah.
Even with a big giant hole in it that could not be repaired in a month's time, much less 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was so much bigger than I was expecting. Like when they first get to the docks, I'm like, oh, that's going to be a submarine. They're going to have a submarine come up. And they're like, oh my God, they're going to have an island that's made out of steel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And I love all that like trim work on it. Like the cool
trim
stuff.
The weird statues of people on the very back.
Yeah, that stuff's
cool. Oh yeah, weird statues. You mean the religious symbols that were on the back? Yeah. Those
those weird
people.
Yeah, those weird people.
Statues. Religious statue people.
Yeah. those emails are coming in again. But no, like it was I wouldn't have known that either. But the there's something about some of that design that is like really good and inspired. And then there are moments where I'm like, man, that looks like the worst CGI treatment of all time. Like some of the effects in this thing are bad, are just straight up bad. Oh. And we are
in
the
thick. Some stuff is some of the most brilliant things I've ever seen.
All right, we'll get to that in a second. But remember, this is a film that poops out right around the time of maximum hype, Lord of the Rings, and that movie. Right. And movies are killing it with their effects, like their set effects, their crowd effects, their monster effects, all that stuff. This looks like shit.
Yeah, it looks about the same weekend as, I don't know if it came out the same weekend, but this was beat at the box office by Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
Okay.
Right.
And the special effects in that versus this, and it feels like there's 10 years difference between them.
Yeah, it's weird.
We've talked about some movies recently we've done this with, and I think it bears repeating. When you have your primary subjects of your film as being modern day heroes reborn from old heroes, it always seems like somebody wants to bring back these old heroes and shove them in the face of the young. And it always feels disingenuous. And I feel like that's what happened here too. It's like, oh, we're going to make them cool. We're going to call it the LXG. We're going to make it hip. Mm-hmm. We're going to do it. Now it works in comic book form. It works there, but on the screen, it is hard to pull that off. It's hard to convince, you know, young people going in that these old school characters are now hip and cool, and I
agree.
The metamorphosis of Dr. Jekyll into Mr. Hyde is horrendous.
You're right. The one from Hyde to Jekyll. Jekyll to Hyde. So the man to monster conversion was bad. The monster to man conversion when he's chained, that actually was pretty dang cool. How he was exploding and he was chained, and it was like, and he was all morphed out, because you could have easily said, how we want to do this. We're just going to show the skin bubbling. That's what we've done for decades.
Zoom in, slicking Lou Ferrigno busting out of the shirt.
That doesn't look good. we already know that doesn't look good. This I thought was creative. I didn't like the underwater other way, because it looked a little stupid. Yeah. But the chain one?
That suit was cool. So bad though. The big long arms and the big dumb suit. It was so bad.
I just don't understand why this movie needed to use any visual effects. Like, it could have just stuck with its traditional special effects and it would have been great, like truly great. Because it gives you things to look at. This is a movie that like starts with a tank driving through a library. Mm-hmm. And it's like amazing because they drove a tank through some walls. It may have been on a cable, and there may have been a bunch of like cheats, right? But like people throwing paper, you know, this kind of thing. But it was real. You were looking at something really happening.
Right.
And then the next big special effect is a fake explosion of that bar in Kenya. And
nobody reacts.
It's right. The people are standing there and the fake fire looks so bad. And I'm just like, why did
burning the film?
Why not just blow something up? You can just blow something up.
What's funny about that, Randy, is they not only everything you said is true, but the actual explosion was overlaid back there.
Yeah,
the house itself wasn't affected. So when it started to calm down a little bit and clear, I'm looking and I'm going, that house is intact. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah, with it. Nothing. Yeah. It was a bad effect. But I'm with Randy. I think they should have stayed more with the Indiana Jones feeling, the old Quartermain type adventure, and not go into this modern superhero adventure.
This is a movie that in the production went to a custom car builder named Ken Freeman in North Carolina and had him build this car that's called Spirit of Nemo. And it's an amazing car. Like it makes no sense because it has two sets of front wheels. Like that makes no sense.
Right.
But the car, like if you go look it up, look at pictures of it. It gets sold on eBay every couple of years. It's an amazing car. Like the thing, everything about it, and it's meant to be seen. And so they drive it into the scene, and you're just like, wow, I love seeing this. And that there's a problem there because the film doesn't commit to things like that throughout. And so then when we get visual effects that look like crap, you're used to seeing special things, amazing real things, and you're just like, oh, come on. Why didn't they just spend a little money here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Why don't you spend some money?
Like there was some times during the Ultra Hyde fight between Hyde and the Big Hyde that looked okay, Like, for a second or two, you'd be like, all right, well, it's 2003. I can forgive a little bit of nuance here, but that's not too bad. But then there'd be moments you're like, oh, Lawnmower Man, what are you doing in my movie?
Yes. Yeah, yes. But I really enjoyed the hide and hide fight. The hide and extra hide. I like that. That was really cool.
Hide, yeah. Hide and hide 2.0.
Yeah. Right, hide 2.0. But, you know, this film suffered from, it suffered from many things. But the one thing that I feel like it visually suffered from is that it wanted to be up to that point, which we had seen superhero adventure movies kind of going towards, you know, the Batman movies that had come before it, specifically the one with Jim Carrey. What was it, Batman? Return. Which one was that one?
No, that was Batman.
Batman Forever. I think it's Batman Forever. Okay, so Batman, right? Batman Forever, and then into the Matrix, and you even had everything that was advertised about this was used all those horrible green fonts. Remember how much we were mm-hmm. with like that neon green around the early 2000s?
Oh, yeah, we were
all that stuff. Cabin, I think the font was Cabin that we were using all over the place.
And so it just suffered from this warning. I definitely feel like it was suffering from trying to be those superhero movies up until that point, and it didn't see anything beyond that. And then it tried to mix it in with this Indiana Jones mix that just never really gelled visually.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. You need the right minds, and it's got to be the right thing. I actually have zero advice for these people because I just
think don't make this movie in 2003. Make it in 2015 or something.
Well, even then, you still need the right people. You need, and I don't mean cast. I mean, you like somebody's got to have a visionary take on this to make it work. And it's like anything that works out on TV that you're surprised about. It's like, you know, I always bring up Fargo because it really shouldn't work as well as it does. And it just freaking nailed it. Well, why? Because Noah Hawley turned out to be a guy who knew what needed to happen to make Fargo work on the small screen and in an episodic way. And in a, you know, different, every series is a different timeline, like all that stuff. He just knew what to do. So you'd have to find somebody who knows what the frick to do here to make it work. Mm-hmm. And then you still have to ask the question, is this the property to even be messing with? Shouldn't it? Maybe this could just sit as an Alan Moore classic and we should, maybe this one just doesn't get made. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. Peter Wilson.
Written word as the printed page, but not as a, not as a film. Right.
Yeah. Peter Wilson and Stuart Townsend, that would be your Mina Harka. That would be your a vampire and Dorian Gray. I thought their characters are actually outstanding.
Not Dorian Gray.
I thought it was pretty good casting.
All he did was vamp. He just walked around going, oh, so then.
But what do you want from Dorian Gray? Have you ever read anything? Have you read
his
story? No. His matter or his vanity, basically.
It is. He's just, you know, he's basically a vampire. I mean, he can't be killed. I mean, he can't look at himself in that portrait. So,
he's
a
vampire. Yeah. He's vanity and vampire. Vampire. Yeah.
And you can, I feel like you can make a case to just trash almost every character in this film. Like there's something terribly wrong with them, with the exception of the Invisible Man. Really enjoyed the Invisible Man. Yeah. Tony, that guy.
Yeah, Tony Curran. I actually couldn't figure out who it was at first because he was invisible. And then once I saw the actor's name, I was like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, and again, to the movie's credit, I think their weird green screen head with a little bit of white paint on it, half painted thing, worked. That looked good.
Yes. Like,
no problem.
But when he's all white,
then he's all white. He's got like a little black beard coming through, and you're like, wait a minute.
He's a clown. He sometimes he's a clown. But I mean,
the mime.
But
still, like, who brought the mime?
from conception to performance to finale, I felt like the Invisible Man was a perfectly cromulent part of this film. I couldn't complain. Other thing, I was just like,
what would you call him again?
Cromulent, the fake word from the Simpsons.
Oh, no. Did you call him the Invisible Man? Because we got a lawsuit on that. He's an Invisible Man.
I don't care. I know he was referred to as Rodney Skinner or something, and I don't care. Yeah. I'm sorry. That is the Invisible Man, and they need to just say that.
That's like Marvel Disney in the last few years having to avoid saying mutant until they bought Fox. It's like this this weird thing that they end up having to do. But yeah, he's very interesting. I think also underplayed and didn't get much to do with him, which bummed me out because I thought he was more interesting than anyone else we spent time with. The vampire Dorian Gray relationship bored me to tears. No interest in that.
I was so mad at that, by the way. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I think Connery looked like he could not get out of there fast
only
enough.
Only time I was pissed at the Mina Dorian interaction was when he says, Dorian Gray says, oh, after they get sliced a couple of times, they're getting their big fight. He goes, we could do this all day. And they only did it for like 5 seconds. I was like, apparently not.
Yeah.
I was looking for epic length fighting battles, but I guess they just wanted to say, yeah, we could, but we're not going to.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm all for super heel stuff. You know, their faces sealing back together. That stuff's kind of cool, but that stuff, I don't know. All that left me dry. Connery looked like he just knew.
Well, I'm trying to remember which ones have done it right. Because if you've got mutant healing ability, Wolverine, Dorian Gray, vampire, whatever, you get sliced, blood comes out. When your skin heals back up, the blood doesn't disappear. It should stay there, but there's just no wound behind it. You brush that off. It's like, oh, see, there's no wound anymore. Cool.
Right.
Great. And now I got something else to think about.
Like those wounds just suck the blood back up in them.
Yeah.
Like
Well, in his case, when he got all shot up, when Dorian Gray got all shot up and his wounds had like sand pouring out of them.
Yeah.
Then later he's got blood.
He's pretty much just dust anyway, right?
Yeah, but he has blood later.
He's just a facade.
I thought it was spitting out the bullets, but
no, he's just a facade of dust, right? Because he's actually long gone, dead.
Yeah, the idea
he made a deal with that portrait that the portrait would age and he would not.
Right, and when he was converted back, he just crumbled into garbage. And so the same. So when I saw his dust coming out of him, I thought, oh, okay, that's interesting. But then later he gets stabbed by her and it's blood on the knife. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Freaking pick a lane. What are we doing here?
Yeah, yeah. That was a mistake.
It's a nitpicky thing, but those kinds of things stick out for me in a movie like this where, you know, they're not really nailing the story. So I'm paying attention to other details and those details are kind of brrr.
But how do y'all feel about the extraordinary character of Phantom that was created and then they just pull the rug? Out and it's like, right. he's not really somebody who is actually maimed or anything. Your boss is just really literally your boss. The boss fight is your boss man. I didn't care for that. I don't like when they do that.
Give me a trope alert on it. It's terrible.
All right.
Yeah.
And it starts the first time we really meet him. He shows up where the league has just assembled for the very first time. They're all together in the same room. And he shows up and he's, you know, wearing his mask and talking about his scars and everything. And then he's like, but I'm not going to kill you now. And I'm like, come on. Yeah. That is the terrible trope. Don't put that early in your movie. It makes me so sad.
Yeah. I like that actor, though. Richard Roxburgh. He's pretty cool.
Right. Yeah.
He's that dude was flying high right then. He was the bad guy in Moulin Rouge that year, or right around that year. Sorry, 2001, so a little earlier. But he was the one that was always going, where is
He was also in Van Helsing.
Oh, yeah. We saw that.
This is a...
You never saw that?
Yeah, we saw that.
I can't believe we didn't talk about it last time we did a James Bond movie, but this is the most fundamental James Bond trope, is that the bad guy is known to you and attacks you, but has a reason to not kill you. Mm-hmm, and it's in From Russia with Love, and it's in Honor, Majesty, Secret Service, and it's in Casino Royale. My God, Casino Royale, Lachif and Bond interact for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, just kill him. Why doesn't Lachif just kill him?
The whole goal was to just
I'm trying to remember. Did Phantom give the whole plan away then as well, or was that later?
Right. And I don't understand. And this always is what happens when you pull that, aha, just kidding, Scooby Doo. I'm the bad guy is this person. The problem is, I immediately go back and go, well, then why in the? There's got to be easier ways to get the formula from Hyde to get blood from. I mean, come on. I mean, you went and destroyed Venice and you did all this crazy trash. How hard would it have been to just do the, I don't know.
Well,
it seemed like it was just a bad plan.
And Quartermain figures out who he is eventually, but we're never given any clues as an audience. You never know. And he's just like, this professor thing. I'm like, huh? Mm-hmm. Why didn't the movie have some clues that would let me figure it out for myself too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, sir. No, thank you. No clue. So, okay. So with everything that I've had to hate on the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, I do find myself enjoying bits and pieces of it. It is one of those movies where I don't mind turning it on because at any point in time, I can turn around and go, oh, that's interesting to look at for about 5 minutes. And then I can, you know, go about my day.
Yeah, that's
so
what
I'm not going to say this movie
that's what
is
you're
absolute
looking for
trash.
A good movie is a movie that you can only watch at like 4 minute increments.
Well,
like,
I mean, okay. I like scenes from this film.
See, I've got that with like Con Air or Armageddon, so I can't really defend. I can't really argue and say, oh, that's a horrible thing to do with this movie, because there are plenty of bad movies that I would do that with myself. But, geez, I think that I think the third time I've seen this, because I saw it in theaters.
Stayed the whole time. Oh, okay.
Stayed the whole time. I only walked out of Johnny Mnemonic. Stayed the whole time. Said, "Well, good. I never have to see that again." And then Tina's brother gives me the DVD as a Christmas present because, well, Brian is nerdy. He likes nerdy things. I'll get him this movie, which is very nice of him. But then it's like, okay, well, maybe I was unfair to the movie. Let's watch it a second time. No,
are you gonna watch that DVD I gave you?
Yeah, so if anybody out there wants the DVD, is an honest thing. I will send you the DVD.
Nice. Oh, that's great. You could sign it and say good riddance.
Clear it off my damn shelf.
Yeah.
It's a really fun topic, and it's fun to try to like make rules around what defines a bad movie that you would watch. Like, what defines it as bad, but if it's on, you will watch it. And everybody has those kind of movies, but like figuring out what the definition, where the rules are, the lines around it, like that's hard. Like, I know that the 1987 Masters of the Universe movie is bad. Yeah. It's objectively bad. And if it's on, I'm watching it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. That's a good one to call out. I think the ones that are campy and weird, I'm always pretty good with those. This isn't campy or weird enough. It's just...
I think for a lot of people, it has to do with who's in it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if there's an 80s Arnold Schwarzenegger film on, I don't care which one it is. I'm just going to sit and watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of Con Air, Malkovich and Buscemi and
Nick Cage.
Cage and Cusack and O'Brien. And I know his name is not really O'Brien, but
yes, it is. It is now.
No, he's a great but character in there, though. I love him in that.
It's so loaded with actors that you love from that era that it's, you pick it right up, you know. But this is like, Sean Connery and...
Man, I could watch Sean Connery in Kenya destroy those group of bad guys after they kill his friend any day of the week. That's just a lot of fun.
Oh, by the way, you want to know who that friend was?
I'm not sure. Who was it?
We have our first connection. That was the dude. I don't have his actor.
Nigel was the character name, right?
He's the play-by-play shot caller guy in Gladiator. So he's the one with the crazy eyebrows that gets up there and goes, "We all gathered here to have a thing with the fighting and the whatnot." He's that guy. So whenever I see that dude do a thing, I go, "Oh, Gladiator guy."
That's guy he was Gladiator. Also Dildano and Barbarella, Queen of the Galaxy. I'm just saying.
Last time I saw
Dildano. I don't think I understood what Dildano meant or could have possibly potentially meant when I watched Barbarella all those years ago.
Leaning towards.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Really? Is that his name, Dildano? Is that true?
Is what it is.
Okay. Dildano. That may have been his name in Gladiator. I don't know. Dildano! Right. Get up there and tell the Gladiator what to do.
We watched his final movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
His final movie?
His final move, not Dildano's.
Did he die from the shot? Is that what happened?
No, what is
he
it?
He died in that Equilibrium.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
We saw that.
Christian Bale, is that what I'm thinking of?
Yep.
Yeah. He died just a couple years after this, 2003, at the age of 62, and Equilibrium was his final movie.
Oh. And Scott, there's another Gladiator connection in this film. Tony Curran, who played the Invisible Man, was also in Gladiator.
Oh, okay. He must have been...
He was just an assassin. Like, he was one of the people that was sent to kill the king at the beginning.
I remember that. No,
I'm sorry, the Caesar or whatever. I don't know what he was.
We should.
Do
you
guys prefer a deep-throated lady vampire or just, you know, regular-throated? Lady Vampire.
What?
Peter Wilson would do this thing where I was like, oh no, it's time for me to be all vampiric.
And she would like the voice, you
know,
the
yeah, okay. Get low.
I
get
didn't
low.
Know where you were going with that.
Yeah, Brian heard deep throat and that's all he heard.
Was there a part of the movie that I still hung up on Bill
Tano, weren't you?
Let's change that to vocal fry.
There you go.
I thought it was fine. I thought
she's fine though.
I thought she was really good in this. Like she didn't have a lot to work with. She had to be, she had to be crazy and mysterious at the same time, and she had to be really aggressive at times. And like she was good.
Yeah, I don't know what she's up to these days. Is she doing much? Let's see here.
No, she hasn't. Hasn't starred in anything for several years.
2015 was the last thing. 2012 before that, and. A smattering. Yeah, that's too bad. She has a very unique face, and I always recognize it, but yeah. I always think she's in more stuff than she's in.
Hollywood.
Yeah. I saw her in La Femme Nikita, the TV show. That was all right.
Yep, and she is turning 50 this week.
Oh, well, there you go.
Congratulations, you've made it.
Welcome to the club.
Happy birthday.
Now give it your deep voice.
I was going to say, where is it here? Oh, had to be challenging though to try and make this good during Lord of the Rings, which was being a bit of a Jurassic Park of its time. You know, it was changing the way we thought of fantasy filmmaking, and it was it was blowing everybody's minds, and it was winning awards, and it was, you know, pretty much Oscar worthy from the get go. And we were all like, "Whoa, look at this!" So anything else coming out around that just had to feel intimidated. Ironically. Mm-hmm. Sean Connery was offered the role point blank to play Gandalf, and he turned it down because, quote, I couldn't understand the script.
Yeah.
I love that bit of trivia. That he was also offered the role of the architect in The Matrix, passed up both of those roles, which really, you know, did very well financially.
Architect I could have gone for. It's the wrong call for Lord of the Rings. They went the right way. Ian McKellen was the right choice. They absolutely dodged a bullet there, because I just think you're too big of a name, and you're freaking Sean Connery in a movie that otherwise has a bunch of new upstarts for the most part. You know, there's some known actors, but not Sean Connery level, right? Like, he's iconic. You don't put him in there and go, oh, yes, let's go to the Shire. Like, you're not going to do it.
And I like the path toward me regretting us sacking this film is that I read, you know, trivia and behind the scenes stuff. And anytime you ever read behind the scenes on Sean Connery, you're kind of told that he's a prick, you know, like he's just.
But wait, did anyone ever doubt that he was? I mean, he seems like. You know, you like him, but he's kind of a dick.
I bet that comes too with like the era of filmmaking where he hit his stride, the early, you know, late 60s or mid 60s, late 60s, early 70s. You kind of had to be the shoulders on which the whole film was placed. There wasn't as much talk about, oh, that's a great director. I'm going to see anything that director produces. It's, oh, Sean Connery is carrying that James Bond film. Great. Right, we got to go see that.
Yeah.
And so that gives you kind of that little prima donna.
Right. It's always the question. Is it the job or is it the man? Might've been the job.
Well, there was also the, you know, him admitting on live TV in an interview with Barbara Walters thinks a woman should get a slap once in a while, and it keeps him in their place. Yeah.
I want to take the explanation a little farther. This is a guy who, as an actor, was like legitimately the most famous actor in the world for a decade, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's got to just be, you know, that's got to just make you into a total jerk.
Yeah, yeah, definitely the job at that point in time.
Yeah, I
reading the trivia on this film and seeing that they had a no Sean Connery accent rule on set.
Did they really?
Come on, but she did it on the film.
The vampire lady did do one. That's hilarious.
I loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
Where is that? You know, I'm gonna play it now. I captured it. I don't know. The problem is, I don't know which one it is. because so the, I've made we'll, so much fun we'll
get
of
to,
all
We'll get
all
to it if you're going to play it in quotes, right?
Yeah. But here like, it is. I found it. Here it is. I'm going to play it.
This hunt's too dangerous for a woman, even one such as you. Leave it to me.
I don't know if that's any good or not.
The trivia is they had a no accent on set rule because Connery's a prick and he's really, really fragile, apparently. Mm. And she got to the point where they were going to do this thing the next day. And somebody, director or producer, someone had said to his accent and she thought she had to call Sir Connery on the phone and ask him for permission before doing it because of their rule. And I realize that's trivia. It might be all entirely apocryphal, but my gosh, Sean, calm down.
I'll give that some scrutiny, but you're right. He's known for this. Always a little bit hard to work with. Although Spielberg tells a different tale. He says he was really a joy to work with on the Indiana Jones movie. I have a feeling that's more about Spielberg being easy to work with.
Right. And Harrison Ford and Harrison being Ford, very, very deferential to him.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So, you know, the penitent man shall pass. And he wasn't very penitent when he was making this. There's another interesting bit of trivia, which is this. 20th Century Fox was unable to get their... Oh, we talked about this. The Invisible Man. Never mind. That was a thing.
And Invisible Man.
Yes. Sean Connery was paid $17 million for the role. And that left the filmmakers very little cash to get anybody else that was big. So they had to stick with this cast of like nobodies who are all still sort of nobodies. I mean,
including very little cash to hire a stuntman that could be made to look like Sean Connery. The stuntman that they used the most was shorter than Sean Connery, wider than Sean Connery, and was wearing a bad beard every single time. And it was like I was getting to where when Sean Connery's character was fighting, I was ready on the pause button. And if suddenly we were behind him and his face was turning, I would pause. Look at this schlub that they have in place of Sean Connery.
Yeah, it was a little obvious multiple times, especially in that bar fight. I mean, the bar fight I enjoyed like Dunaway because I was like, hey, maybe this is the movie. Maybe we're having a kind of an old man Indiana Jones time here. This is great. Let's go adventure time or whatever. Sadly, the movie's not that. But yeah, that double great. Body double was a piece of poop. He was no good. It's very bad. Mm-hmm. Not that, you know.
He's no good.
By the way, this is the last film the director directed as well. This is Stephen Norrington, who's really? Known for
everybody quit after this. After I know. Like,
he made
never want to do anything like this again.
He made Blade, which was great. I love Blade, and
love Blade.
He quit. That was it. Now he did other stuff since then, but not a ton. Special effects work. The latest thing was something called Harbinger Down back in 2015. The Exorcist, the beginning in 2004, and then we go all the way back to Alien 3 in 1992. So his attempt to direct films was brief. He did Death Machine, Blade, The Last Minute, and The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and that's it. He was out.
I'm interested in seeing Death Machine, 1994 UK action horror sci-fi. Got some xenomorph-looking thing in there.
Look at that. That looks cool. Can we get that on the list in case it pops?
Got Brad Dourif in it.
Yeah.
Oh, sign me up.
Look at that gun, that stupid gun she's got.
Right.
Oh.
And it's funny, they got a character named Scott Ridley.
Yep. They do. They have a character named John Carpenter. They have Sam Raimi.
Oh, I got to watch this. Wow. What is this trash?
Yeah, what are we doing? All right, we got to watch this. 94, find it. Death Machine, right. 1994. It's his first film. Anyway, but that guy apparently just tooth and nail with Connery, and it's probably generational. The dude's like a younger dude and looks a little punk rock if you look at his photo on IMDb. He was probably just like,
you little whippersnapper, you don't tell me when I need to redo a scene. I'm Sean Connery.
I do want to give credit. Like, Connery really committed to this. He wasn't an absent like actor in spots like where there was action. Like there's lots of fighting where Sean Connery at his age has his arms around a dude and is throwing that guy. And of course the guy is acting. The person he's throwing is throwing himself, right? But man, Sean Connery's right in there, and that's pretty cool.
What is so you'd have been like 60 something. Yeah, he's moving around pretty good for a 65 or 66 year old, something like that.
Yeah, I thought I had him at 69 for
is
this.
Is that right?
Film,
okay, may be right, actually. But I remember being so bummed because when I heard it bombed and he was pissed and all these people were saying all these things about it at the time, I remember this. I went, oh, really? We're done then? He's just going to.
This movie did not bring joy to anybody who made it or was involved with the making of the film.
So he said thank you, and he Marie Kondo'd it right out the window.
Yeah, he was out, and he said, "I'm not doing movies anymore." And I remember it hitting pretty hard. I don't even it want did. To say the name Gene Hackman because I'm afraid he'll die tomorrow if I say it. But I'm worried about that too. Gene Hackman after 04 stopped acting in a bad movie. It was another bad movie to end on. It was a what was that called? Some Alaska town name, and it was bad. And I remember at the time going, oh no, Gene Hackman, don't just stop. Just keep going because you're fine. You got time left. Clearly he has. He's still alive. Oh, cross your fingers, you guys. I think I may have just started the curse again. But
yeah, he's also 90 now, and you know, it's the time of coronavirus.
I love Gene Hackman. He needs to live forever. Anyway, I don't know why I brought him up except to say Gene Hackman's great. It never hurts. Never hurts to say that.
Are you not going to get an argument from me?
From you? You like him as well?
He is all right by me, Waterworld.
He's not in Waterworld. What are you talking about? Who are you thinking of? You're thinking of Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, yeah.
And he did die. He's out.
Oh, now you made me sad. You turned something that was supposed to be. And
I know. Well, look, watch Waterworld.
This podcast, just like they ruined the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
The thing is, I don't know how the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen could be a two-hour movie. It just needs to be so much more for me to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. The bigger bummer for me overall is Alan Moore's attitude towards film adaptations of his work is really sour, and it started from this. It bums me out because V for Vendetta, later Watchmen, then the Watchmen series, and other stuff that he's responsible for turned out pretty great, I think.
Yeah.
And if things
had gone in a different order, like if Watchmen or V for Vendetta had come out first, probably a different attitude.
I agree. I think V for Vendetta in particular was really adherent to his vision and what that whole book was. Like, I prefer it over the books, actually, because it's just more concise and it's, I don't know, I find it more enjoyable, but it doesn't, it's not at the expense of the original purpose of the content. So yeah, like to be him now where you were I almost made a terrible reference. I'm glad I didn't say it. But just imagine, you know, your first taste of, hey, my work finally made it to cinema. And what are comics if not, you know, movie-like?
The first draft of movies?
Right? Yeah. Oops. Like, what a thrill that would be for anybody to see their work done that way and to have it turn out to be this. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I would be annoyed if I were him. And he was, and he is. And his beard is 4 miles long.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, well done.
Appropriate response to somebody crapping on your dream.
I wrote down here, Mr. Hyde skipped leg day. Did you guys notice that?
He totally did, yeah.
He had little tiny spindly legs and the rest of him was all huge. That's really a dumb idea. Like, Randy had the right idea at the beginning. Take Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and just make him a hideous, horrible man. You don't have to make him... Well, but then the comic, he's a big, giant, like, Hulk creature, so...
Right, but that's the thing. Like, the art of making a film when you have source material is in knowing what to do when you have to change it to make it better, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that's just a really, really simple thing. Forget the special effects here, or I'm sorry, forget the visual effects here, and just find a way to make the man a monster, you know, with prosthetics and so on. It would have been better.
Or swap in an actor... Who's just a little bigger but real big, you know, like realistic large. And
right. The only reason why you noticed any of that stuff is because the characters just did not interact very well. Mm. I mean, if you had some endearing characters that you really felt invested into, you would forget about all the other stuff. All the other stuff would just disappear.
Right.
But you didn't. So all you had left was what you actually was seeing. And a lot of it was, you know, just a little too close. You could just see bad things. But I'm telling you, once again, one of my most favorite morph scenes in any film is when Hyde turns into the monster, from the man to monster. I think it is amazing.
You mean monster man, right? Is that what you mean?
No, you're right. Monster man. You're right. He gets
depleted. Yeah, that was all right. It was mostly
monster man.
That was mostly editing and flashing lights and stuff. But I agree. It looked all right. I guess what I'm saying is, if I was 10 when I saw this movie, which is yesterday, old is when I saw it. I didn't see it when it came to theaters. I'd love this. Like, this is one of those movies where I'm reminded that a child would love this movie and just run circles around the house wanting to be these characters and just would love it. And we heard from listeners like that, that would have been around 10 or so at the time, who were like, oh man, don't smash my favorite movie. I was 10 years old and I loved it and blah, blah, blah.
So I have a 10-year-old and I watched this without him because you sometimes do that with PG-13 films.
Sure.
You really should do that with all PG-13 films and a 10-year-old. Like, I'm not ready for him to see it yet, but I think in a couple of years, I'll be interested to see what he makes of it. That's
yeah, interesting. And his taste may be too, the modern quality of adventure things, again, Marvel stuff or whatever, may taint his ability to see this older thing and appreciate it. But I'd be curious too, like just from a raw, like if you were a 2002 kid, 2003 kid, and you saw this,
yeah. You have to have been 10 in 2002 2003 right. When this came out.
It feels like,
and then
it.
You'd appreciate it.
That, or right. Either just completely sheltered from all other cool things until you're 10, you know, and then show this, and then show them all the other cool things. I don't know how that would work, but
that is one shelter one from all the cool things when you're a certain age.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it's possible. Like, actually, it's
not. I think about this all the time. Obviously, I mean, I have a good reason to think about this all the time, but. I'm curious what some people make of ratings. Like, why do we rate things if everyone just ignores them? Because they do. Everyone just ignores ratings. Week, I was reading a discussion where somebody came along and was like, I have a 6-year-old and I'm looking for video games for them to play. We're in lockdown. And all the suggestions were like, video games for teenagers, and the person said there were 6. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, well, forget it, man. Ratings just must not mean anything to anybody.
I think you've just got to use it as a baseline. You say, okay, typically Tristan's okay with PG-13 stuff, nothing R, but we kind of adjust down or adjust up. You know, it's just like you would do now. You're thinking about seeing a movie. Oh, I remember those days. And you look and it's like, oh, it's got an R rating. I'm okay with our ratings, and I kind of adjust.
Right. The thing they've done
is sliding scale.
The thing they've started subtitling the ratings. Of course, we've all seen this on TV. Yeah. It's like TV rated for this. And So there's one that I saw recently that intrigued me, and it makes me wonder if it's not part of some of the entertainment industry being funded by Chinese money, because there was now there's ratings, and included in that reason for the rating is examples of consumerism. And I was like, really? It's like that's a factor on the rating of films
like
now?
Product placement kind of thing.
that's really smart.
Or just greed. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, interesting.
Yeah. I like that, because like I say, I look at that. I look really, really closely at that. And I like the,
sorry,
I like
so
the details.
Yeah, I
you know,
the way, well, yeah, like
at some point in my lifetime, they started putting the word smoking in the description for right. For ratings details, and I like that a lot because like it has caused me to get ready to have a discussion with my kid. You know,
yeah. And also, these are just tools. Tools for parents. Right. But the tools are just for parents. It's like if you decide that you're going to sit down. See, this is the way I would do it. I don't look at it as, oh, it's PG-13. No 10-year-old sees any of those in this house. That's not the rule, because that just means they're going to go, ooh, what's this
there
about?
Might
see
be
it, their friends.
A nipple.
Right. They're just going to go to their right. friends and see it. So what you do instead is you say, oh, PG-13. Well, I'm going to watch this one with you, and we're going to talk about this smoking scene when it does come up, or this scene of whatever. That's what this stuff helps parents do, at least in my opinion.
And you look at all the different ratings. Right. Like you look at for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it was rated 11 in Denmark, 12 in Brazil, 13 in Argentina, 11 in Norway, 12 in the Netherlands. Right. And so you take all of that into account. It's real easy to look that up.
Maybe the ratings are really for the kids, so they can realize whether or not they're going to watch the film with their parents. It's like, oh, shoot. It's got smoking reference in it. Dad's going to give me the smoking speech again right in the middle. We're going to watch that with him.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have to talk about a nipple. Great.
Talking about sex right in the middle of my freaking movie.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about watching a movie that does have some adult themes in it with a kid is when the kid is outraged because, you know, they've already been here before, right? Mm-hmm. My kid knows that smoking is bad. He knows that I'll disown him if he ever does it. And so he, like, as soon as the smoking comes on screen, he's so mad. Why would they do that? Oh, they're killing themselves. You know, like, mm-hmm. that's my favorite thing. I feel like I've created a fun little entertainer to watch a movie with.
Yeah, it is. Some of the most memorable fun stuff with my kids is watching stuff like that and getting those reactions. But I'm doing it with them, so they didn't. You know, they're not sitting around going, the forbidden fruit. How do I obtain the forbidden fruit? Instead, they're like, no, I'm like, all right, come have some fruit. Just know that some of it's forbidden, and we're going to talk about it. You know, like, it works out. Parenting advice 101. Everybody, write that down. Mm-hmm. Hey, you guys, we're going to talk about Hawthorne for a minute. Oh, man, do I love Hawthorne. Premium tailored personal care brand. They make it so easy for guys like me and you to feel and smell their best. That's right, ladies. Sometimes we need stuff, too. Anyway, if you're looking to take your self-care routine to the next level, Hawthorne helps you do that with high-quality products tailored specifically to your needs. They give you free shipping on your order if you decide you're not satisfied with their product. They even give you a free shipping on the return and give you suggestions based on your feedback. That's pretty great. I love a company that does that. Here's how easy it is. You go onto the site, you take this quest or test rather, not a quest. Well, it's kind of a quest, but it's a short one. Hawthorne.co is where I went. Take a quick survey and they ask you some questions. Real simple stuff like, is your skin dry? Is it oily? How often do you want to put deodorant on? That sort of thing. And at the end, it's very quick and easy, by the way. At the end, it gives you your results, and the results are fantastic because the stuff they sent me, I have this cologne that my son is jealous of now because I smell great and he still dates people, so he'd like some of mine. So I said, hey, go to Hawthorne.co and get your own, buddy. Anyway, they're amazing, and I really love everything they've sent, including the soaps. Oh, the face scrub is amazing. The shower gel is really good. Just really, really good stuff. All the perfect scents, everything I like. And for this holiday season, what perfect time is there, more than now, to give somebody the gift of good male grooming? Get it at Hawthorne. All right? So, here's what I want you to do. Get some special offers for the holidays going on right now by visiting Hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne.co. I always say that. .co to check out their special holiday offers. All right? So, go check it out. We love it at FilmSack. You'll love it, too. Of this, I am sure. All right. Let's do... I have some clips from this movie I think we need to play. So are you guys down for that? Because I am.
Yeah.
All right, good. Let's start this part of the show with a little bit of this, which is... Why does this say Fletcher thing about chickens? What is this? All right, hold on.
Fletcher talks about the chickens, man.
There's some confusion here. Oh, I know what happened. All right. I pulled some files and they aren't supposed to be here. All right, moving on.
Now I want to hear what Fletcher said about the chickens.
Well, I can tell you real quick. He said this.
I got a thing about chickens.
That's it. He just has a thing about chickens. Okay. That's it. Aren't you glad we played that? Man, I am so glad.
Now I have closure.
Yeah.
All right, here it is. The caster from Gladiator, to give it a modern spin. He would have called League of Legends games if he was alive today. But anyway, here he is talking in Quatermain's presence.
And I presume you're another traveler. Got it in your head to sample the Dark Continent. And while you're at it, hunt down old Alan Quatermain and have him tell his adventures.
Well,
do you fill a seat, sir?
You can just hear it in his voice.
King Titus of the...
All right. This is... I got a lot of Connery doing ishes because that's just what he does. So, hey, guess what, Sean Connery? I don't have a rule here about your accent. We're just going to play him. So here's one.
But the question is...
Yes.
Do I need the Empire?
Yeah. The question is... We named the dog Indiana.
Would we, going back to the Gandalf thing, would we have liked to hear, you shall not pass?
Yeah, right. Could he have yelled it? That's a good question.
You shall not pass. You ever lose your car keys? All right. Here's sweating and how he says sweating makes me laugh.
Sweating is what we do.
Sweating is what we do.
Sweating.
Sweaty. He's sweaty.
He's very sweaty. Very sweaty. All right. Don't like, oh, there's another one with some sweet accent.
I don't like theatrics.
Shh. Beatrix. Here's your Bond reference.
My underlings call me Sir. My superiors call me M.
M.
Just M.
May as well have had a money penny.
Why does that sound so familiar?
Trivia says that that there was a potential to have an ancestor of James Bond character in this movie, and I'm glad they didn't do that.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. That's good. Well, whatever. At this point, you could have done it and would have been fine because that movie sucks regardless. But yeah, that's dumb. That's a bad idea. All right. Say the name of your movie is what this is called.
Newest generation of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
League of what?
League of what?
LXG, baby.
What?
You know, we talk about a reboot, and there apparently was a planned reboot in 2015. Maybe this would make a good video game. You know, you get to use the different characters to get through different parts of Venice and Mongolia and stuff like
that. You could swap around. Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. There's an invisible man for a while. Sure. And I'm going to.
It practically goes without saying, we've talked about this many times. When you have this large a cast of characters, a film is not always the best way to portray it. TV series, long form, you know, 48 hours or more worth of exploration.
Yeah.
It had two shooting puzzles. You have the one shooting puzzle where you have to shoot next to Mr. Hyde to make him go in different directions. Mm-hmm. And then the other shooting puzzle where you have to take these ridiculously long lob shots on your enemy. That's fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But you'd have a practice level where you have to shoot a buoy that's been fired out far into the water.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
That Hyde chase scene was almost brilliant foreshadowing, but it just couldn't quite pull it off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, well, it looked bad, but yeah, I'm with you.
Hey, yeah.
Hey, here's Brian Ibbett talking to his prom date.
So dark.
I got some new prom date footage here. Speaking of footage, this is from your mom, Brian. She sent this in.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
In tape form. I had to convert it, which sucked, but it's fine. Tell her I want MP3s from now on. But anyway, this is you just talking to your prom date. So just a little bit of back and forth. Here you go.
Rumor has it that you're a pirate.
I'd prefer a less provocative title.
Jeez, you guys got really weird on your date. It's very weird.
Well, it was a dress up. It was a themed prom.
Okay.
By the way, did you see that that Jamie and somebody else have done what I asked them to do? They've taken every reference to my prom night and assembled it in chronological order from your clips.
Oh, way to spoil what we're playing at the end of the show today.
Oh, well, way to tell me not to talk about it.
Right, way to keep your secret.
Way to give you the heads up so I don't spoil it.
Yeah, I probably should have done that. I didn't know you were aware of it. I thought I was going to surprise you. But
oh, yeah, no, I love this thing.
Yeah, so we have basically, it's a three-parter because it's long. So today we're playing part one. And it's going to be great. So stay tuned, everybody.
So good. Okay, well, sorry, spoiled it.
No, it's all good. Here's a...
Surprise, everybody!
Draft in my nether regions. Oh, this is good.
I'm feeling a bit of a draft in my nether regions. And I must say, it's quite refreshing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. He's naked.
Yeah.
I didn't, all the time.
Right. Like, I didn't understand that. Like, you should be feeling the draft in all of your regions. You're naked. and when you put on a piece of clothing, you can now be seen, but it's the only thing you're wearing. He puts on a coat, and it's like, oh, man, he's so going commando right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many times I'm sure he's brushing his junk up against a door handle or a chair or something like that.
Here's Connery being honorary is what I wrote.
Oh, nice.
I don't know what that means. Here it is.
Please tell me this is Harker's wife with a sick note.
Oh, they were meeting with a sick note.
What's a sick note? Is that, do you get razors? Do you have to trade that in for razors?
Yeah,
when you get
take
a
the note?
Note
in. Well, no, you mail them in now because it's just over the internet.
It's like a coupon.
Yeah, a coupon. That's how it works. There's Harry's and there's Shave Buddy or whatever, and their Schick Note. Those are the three.
Yes. Dollar Shave Club. Yeah.
Yeah. All those guys. All right. Here's Connery saying best.
Best.
Okay. Now we've heard this before because back in the day we have this. Oh, you guys won't hear that shit. I got to quit changing that. Hold on a second. Okay. I want you to hear it. Okay. Here it is. This is old. Come on, Scott. Pull it up.
Your best.
You guys remember that one? That was good.
Yeah. Best. What is a best?
Best.
Your best.
Oh, best.
Which door?
Yeah, it's like
best.
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 Best. I don't know. It's just how he says best. All right. Here's a bless me. What? Oh, okay. I don't know what it is. I'll just play it.
A witch doctor did bless me once.
Oh, bless me once. I clearly was very obsessed with this as he spoke.
So yes.
I can't help it. All right. Gross moment. We didn't talk about it before. This is it. I guess there are people that get mad at me when I don't play this intro for it. So I'm just going to play it. So here you go.
Gross.
Okay. Guess first, and then I'll play it if you know it. Because now you know it's auditory. So what do you think it is?
Let's see.
Man, was it? Was there somebody drinking blood? Was Amina drinking blood during the fight with Dorian Gray?
You're so close.
So there was, was there finger licking? Was there finger licking during that scene?
Finger licking.
There was some finger licking. You're right. Yeah. It's actually not that scene.
Something on his fingers.
It was the scene earlier when it's when she killed the shooter in the library, or the guy that had the knife to her neck. Sorry.
Right.
And when she got done, she made the following sound with her fingers and her lips. Here we go.
Oh yeah.
Gross. Oh, that's
don't
so
look
gross.
At me. I'm a monster.
It's not even like the blood. It's the sound she's making. It's like, my gosh, it's like eating. It's like somebody who eats a salad really loud next to you and you just can't wait to get out of there. That's what that's like. All right. Here's some more Connery putting S and H's on things. Here you go.
But that was bloody close.
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 Bloody close. All right. Here. What? Oh, from Sydney. Oh, this is a phone call. We're not doing that yet. All right, here's another one where he does more eshes. Here you go.
Venice still stands.
Venice still stands. It's good stuff. And then this scene, which I thought they had cut out of the theatrical version, but apparently not. Okay, so this is a weird moment in this movie. See if you guys remember it. Here you go.
We heard a noise.
It was nothing.
That was good. That was good.
Well, wolf supposed to be, or the tiger supposed to be? I didn't understand. What was
that? He had mentioned earlier that a tiger becomes fierce right before it dies, and that was the foreshadowing of his fierce sacrifice that he was going to have to make.
Oh, maybe. So wait, that's,
I didn't say it was good. I'm just saying it was there.
But you're saying, but so just conveniently, there's a.
He had mentioned it before that scene, and then when the tiger showed up, you're like, oh, okay.
Right, but that's dumb. It's dumb because, okay, I understand that idea, like that concept's fine, right. But then, oh, great, there happens to be a freaking white tiger out in the tundra that can come stare
at me. In case you didn't get our subtle foreshadowing, here's an absolute answer to that.
We're pretty much just handing this one to you, telegraphing it in.
Here, have this tiger we have handy tiger. All right, well, there's your clips. Now we must needs do this. It's the Film Sack checklist. That 2002 CG not holding up, check. You can see how irritated Connery is the entire time, check. Longer than Hyde's arms, check. That movie's too long, by the way.
It is way too long.
Yeah.
Too long. That movie should have been 90 minutes max, and they didn't get the memo. Connections, we talked about a couple of them, but I'm curious about Randy's Star Trek connections, which he found.
So the director of photography for this film was David R. Hardberger, successful cinematographer. He started out, his career started as a cameraman working on two movies called Star Trek the Motion Picture and Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan.
Whoa, that's a connection for sure.
Yeah. Some of the stunt crew for this movie also all worked together on Star Trek Into Darkness. So this includes stuntmen named Hiro Koda, Eddie Perez, Daniel Arias, Steve Upton. And if you look at the connections between this film and specifically that one movie, Star Trek Into Darkness, there are 22 total people who worked on both films, which sounds like a production company, right? Like that's just a whole company. But I looked really closely at a lot of them, and there's no production company shared between these two films. It's just a big coincidence that these 22 people all worked on these two movies. The last that really caught my attention was Glenn Hetrick. Do you know him?
He's the
the gothic master. Off. Yeah, face yeah. off the TV reality show.
Yes, Glenn Hutrick.
Yeah. He did makeups for this movie, and he's also been credited for all 31 episodes of Star Trek Discovery as their makeup master. I love that reality show, man. Mackenzie Westmore, Michael Westmore's daughter, and the great V. Neil are the other hosts. I'm glad someone's seen it.
I love that show, yeah.
I don't think I even knew about that show. How come I have this?
Yeah, it's like we may have talked about it once or twice with Bill Duran, because it's like basically a bunch of people competing to be a makeup, movie makeup artist.
Aesthetics creators.
Oh, aesthetics. We have talked. Exactly. You know what? Now I remember. Yeah. Yes. Because at one point Bill had auditioned or something.
Oh, Bill, and Bill is good friends with a guy who won the second season, a third season, and
keeps him in the basement.
keeps him in the basement.
Yeah, exactly. It really sprung a relationship from that.
And something I love about Glenn Hetrick is that he's never seen without a lot of makeup on himself. Mm. And I just think that's really cool. Like to always, you know, always be seen in public at looking, you know, he's usually looking, like I say, very gothic. His hair is always very dramatic. His beard is always cut into amazing sharp edges and this kind of thing.
If he was a hockey player and he got 3 goals in a row, he would have a hat trick is what he would have.
Hat trick.
Yeah. Think of that. All right. Now. Oh, what are we doing now? It's the Twitter. No, the soundtrack grade. I give it an LAD for loud and dumb. I didn't like it. It was just too much. It's like, okay.
LAD for the LXG.
Yeah. I'm sure it's done by capable people, but it didn't seem significant or very good. So there's that. Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
A league of extraordinary gentlemen. Not a league, since there's only about 5 of them. Not extraordinary, since everywhere they go, they meet people with powers. And not gentlemen. There's a woman right there. Mm-hmm. This movie should have been called The Of.
Oh, very nice. Just take out league and win.
And, gentlemen. No, it'd be An Of. The Of is already trademarked.
Oh, right.
Yes, right. Yeah. Universal owns that. Yeah.
Right.
Well, good. Well done. Dunaway. Speaking of which, it's your turn.
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. May this new century be yours, son, as the old one was mine. Meanwhile, in Kenya, a witch doctor. Don't you die on me. Ooh-loo-loo.
Wait. Are you doing an Age of Empires 2 priest noise? Yeah. Is that what that was?
Ooh-loo-loo.
That's amazing.
Hey, listen, Sean Connery's body to Africa. There's a witch doctor there who will take care of all of our sadness.
Oh, and they definitely left this thing hanging like, we hope this makes a sequel, but that didn't work out. So no sequel. Ibbit.
The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. You don't just simply watch this movie. You have to adjust for the wind and the waves. When you're ready, you can pull the trigger and watch it. Take your time. Feel each shot. You have all the...
I appreciate the feeling of relaxing calm I feel now from me doing that. That was good. All right, now this. Alternate titles. This was almost called The Adventures of Alan Dollarmane, A Tale of Inflation, but it didn't. It was too long. They didn't do it. Or Today's Tom Sawyer. All right, moving on. We got a couple of quick emails. Actually, this is not an email. It's a played phone call deal unit. Was sent to us via the
email. Does it have like a high streaking noise in the background that we can't hear? Little stuff bombs in my house? Because no. I don't want to listen to that.
No, I promise not. Won't be that.
It will give you. It does contain the brown notes. So
no.
Yeah, pucker up, pumpkin. It's time for a challenge. This came to us via the email address though, filmsack@gmail.com, and I'm going to play it now. Here it is. This is a call from Sydney. Enjoy.
Hi, Scott, Brian, and Randy. This is Craig from Sydney, down in Australia. A quick suggestion for you guys: The Cars That Ate Paris. Peter Weir, the Australian director that went on to do Gallipoli and a whole lot of other great films. This was one of his early ones, 1974. It's about a small town that is going broke called Paris in the outback, and they decide to stage car crashes and sell the scrap. It is truly a bizarre and horrible film, and I've included an image in the email. I also used to sit down and write my ideas down. I thought it would be a really good idea to get a voice-activated recorder. No one do it. My one went straight in the bin because I had a great idea. The next day I listened back and it was like, have a great time. Hope everyone's well. Talk to you later. Bye.
That's awesome.
It was great. And I thought you said his name was Sydney, but you meant he was from
yeah,
Sydney.
From
and so
Sydney.
When he first started talking, I was like, how ironic that his name is Sydney.
Yeah.
And he has.
I should have clarified when I said this call is from Sydney, I meant the place.
Right, right, right.
Man.
From Sydney.
That was my lack of imagination, not your fault.
It's all good. I'll tell you what though. So this Paris, what is it? What was the name of the movie?
Paris. Yeah.
Yeah. So the cars, this is significant for me. He didn't really go into it here, but the car that is showcased on the poster of that movie, and I assume in the movie, is a beetle looking car, just all spiked out with rusty spikes. It's basically Fury Road made an homage to that car with the name of the faction. But.
Oh, that was this one. That's right. We talked about this before. Where did we talk about this?
So fellow Australian filmmaker Peter Weir is giving him a little nod there in the Fury Road.
Yeah.
So that's cool. We should watch it. It seems like a
Cars Ate Paris.
And it's even got Bruce Spence in it, who is the gyrocopter pilot.
Oh, the googly-eyed guy. Yeah. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that goes, nice. It's that guy, right? Do you know who I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
A meme. There's a but meme please. With that actor, I think, where it's just him talking to a camera, and at some point he goes, nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have to find it.
Nice.
It's pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah, well, I'm on the list. Let's get it on there. Let's make that happen.
Yeah,
Peter Weir is one of my favorite directors as well. That guy makes amazing films. I mean,
right. By the way, also just to fall back to what we were talking about earlier, the Death Machine is on Amazon Prime.
Ooh.
Oh.
We got to do Death Machine. Holy shit. Move it in. Make it new. Yeah.
Slide it in
softly, gently, but slide it nonetheless. Okay. All right. Here is I promise that was, by the way, filmsack@gmail.com. So you don't want to send those. Before we talk about our next movie, I'm going to play this Ibbot's Prom Date Part One. Okay. So this is called Before, and there's a special thanks on here. So it's Jamie, but also a special thanks to Jose Perez, or is it Josie Perez? Anyway. I'm going to play it now. Enjoy. This is probably pretty old stuff. Have fun.
I wish somebody would assemble all of the Brian's Prom Night audio into a timeline, into a...
nice.
Put them in a chronological order.
And describe. That'd be great. Jamie, we're looking at you, buddy. Get in there. This is what Brian Ibbett told his date the morning of the prom. 5-6 hours later is when the prom was, but this is you early calling your date and telling her this.
Sure. Ready your breakfast and eat hearty. But tonight, we dine in hell.
It's a little rough. It's a little rough.
Well, the Red Lobster was booked already.
This is before prom night, so it's probably just hours before prom took place, and this is what they told you.
The disc, the girl, the guns. By dawn, they don't exist. Are we clear?
Yep, there you go.
Okay.
I miss my When in Rome disc.
Aww.
A clip of her talking to Brian when he was trying to figure out what tux to wear to prom. That's great, the backstory. Okay. Yep. So this is what she said to you after a while. I guess you were struggling with it, and she said this.
Wear it until you love it!
There you go. I don't know what the deal was, but this is, I think, you yelling at a date, or maybe she's yelling at you, but here it is.
Darling, we're becoming unfashionably, unreasonably late.
Wow, you were a picky mother scratcher back then. You're talking to your date after you picked her up for prom. So this is you right after you picked her up, okay?
Do you talk? You know, talk. Me, human, boy.
I dated a lot of shy girls in high school.
Sure.
It's true.
I understand. This is what Ibbett's prom date said immediately. I mean, it was all the niceties at the door. The parents are like, have fun tonight. We'll see you guys at your curfew. But then as soon as she gets in the car, she changes. She becomes who she really is. And this is what she said to you.
Do exactly what I say. Exactly. Don't move unless I say. Don't make a sound unless I say. Do you understand?
Do you understand?
Oh my gosh, your date was terrible. Oh. You said this to your date before the night really got going. Like, she was in your car and this was you.
Do you mean to tell me that there's actually a human body under that clothing?
Wow. This one's interesting because it seems like you were impatient with the girl and maybe her, you know, your advances were being rebuffed a little bit. And here's what you said to her.
I'd like to move this thing along.
There you go. So there's that. Man, this is one of my favorite clips that Ibbot's mom's ever sent me. This is you describing your prom date. Because we always hear clips from the prom date, but we never hear you describe your prom date.
She's going to be a 34-year-old nymphomaniac. And we're going to go to the Amazon basin together and water ski. Woo!
It says Ibbot to his date in the car. That's all I know.
Where's the moan? What? The moan. There is supposed to be a moan here.
Whoa, wow.
Right. Oh, you know, no. I felt like, you know, I'd been working hard for it. Give it to me.
All right. Oh, my God. These are great. It feels like maybe I didn't do a ton in between, but it feels like it jumped a ton of dates. Like
I thought we'd done so many more.
That's, yeah. I mean, there is more, but it seems like some of those
that's only
recent.
A third of what, of all there is, but,
right. But like the one, like the Moan one, that's a recent film, isn't it?
That's recent. That was Gremlins 2.
Oh yeah. How can, maybe he did them not chronological.
Yeah, it's like did it chronologically. It sounds like he just did it however it fit in best. Yeah.
It's chronologically of the date, not chronologically the date that we recorded Film Sack. This is the evening. So this is me picking her up. This is me getting her in the car. This is
okay.
This is the chronology of prom night itself.
That's hard to do. Jeez.
I know. That's why this thing gets even more credit, because it's so brilliant.
Wow. Hats off to both those guys.
Yeah. And I like that it kind of tells us there's a story arc for this.
Exactly.
It starts with these expectations, and they're basically everyone involved expects that there's going to be people getting laid. And then I'm hoping that as the story goes on, those expectations will be dashed. They will be horribly skewered.
I'm not going to give you a spoiler, Randy. You'll just have to tune in.
So all we've
over
heard
the next two episodes,
we've heard predate. We've now met the date, and there's a lot of date.
Exactly.
So.
She's gotten in the car. She yelled at me. I wondered if there was a body under those clothes. Yeah.
Some moaning and stuff. We're expecting.
Moaning. There was no moan.
Yeah, no moan.
That I thought. I thought that took place a lot later on the date. But okay, whatever. You know.
You're an early riser. Wait, what? I don't know what that means. That doesn't sound right.
How could you tell? I've been invisible this whole time.
Next episode, we're going to play that one, and then we'll play another one, and then another one. No, two more. There's two more. So just two more. And then you guys are going to love it. So stay tuned for that. Thanks, Jamie. And thanks, Jose Perez, for helping out in whatever way he did. Okay, that's it. Our next film, Mad Max, the original Mad Max from 78, 80?
In the 70s. Mad Max from the 70s.
Okay. Late 70s. I know that. Anyway.
Before he was a warrior on the road who had much fury, 1979.
He was just angry.
April 1979. That was my stall.
Yep. And you're going to get the whole here it is. In a self-destructing world, a vengeful Australian policeman sets out to stop a violent motorcycle gang. And the significance here is that the bad guy in this movie is also Immortan Joe in the new one. So that's cool. But we get to see the beginnings of it all. How did it all start? Why was Mel Gibson?
How did he get mad?
Yeah. Why did he get mad? Exactly.
Who is so mad about
why
it?
Why are you mad, bro?
Yeah. They don't call him Passive Max Happy Road.
Slightly Irritated Max.
I've seen this one so many times.
I've seen it. Weirdly, you'd think I was a fan of I Am of the series. You'd think I'd seen it more, but I've only seen this one twice. It's my least favorite of all of it. But it's significant in that it's, you know, anything that's the beginning of something needs
launch,
to be seen.
Yeah. Music by Brian May, but not that one.
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm excited for a hot second. And then I wasn't.
Australian musician Brian May, not British astronomer Brian May.
There you go. Here it is. Hughes Keys Byrne played Toe Cutter in in the old one. In Fury Road, he plays Immortan Joe. All right. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for being here. Oh, and the next film is not Oh, no, it is next week. Never mind. Forget me. We have a show today. Did you notice there was a show today?
Forget me.
That's the thing. Last week, I told everybody no show this week, but yet here's a show. So don't right. answer, don't look at me for any good, solid information. Next week is fine. It'll be on Sunday instead of Saturday, but other than that, you're still getting a film sack next weekend, okay? So don't even pretend I didn't even say it or bring it up. Like, I never even talked about it. You didn't see me. I'm another invisible man. All right. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for watching and tuning in. No one's watching. Thanks for listening. Filmsack.com is the email or no, is our website. I can't say shit. Filmsack@gmail.com. We are at Filmsack.
I've never witnessed someone have a stroke before.
leave us. It smells like toast, but actually my wife is making toast right now. I can smell it. Anyway, at least I hope so. Leave us reviews wherever you get your podcast. We'd love that. It helps us get up in the rankings and get discovered by other people who have no idea what they're missing. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
He's afraid.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
But that was bloody close.